And welcome back. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about something that has been in the news a lot over the last few weeks, and that is the inability of Congress to pass an extension of the Medicaid subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. We'll be talking specifically about reporting that has been done on this issue by Elva Ostrich for the Local News Fund and the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative. Is that correct?
Yes. My name is Diana Albasola. I'm the project manager and editor for the Southern New Mexico Journalism Collaborative, which itself is a project of the New Mexico Local News Fund, a nonprofit that's trying to find ways to sustain and improve local news across New Mexico. And Elva was looking into this story for a few weeks as of recently, and she did an update about what it means for New Mexicans who shop on the exchange, which is pretty much people who don't have insurance through their employer, or they might be a student who no longer has access to insurance through their parents. So those are some of the key groups there, or they work for a small employer who doesn't offer a workplace insurance. So.
And I think we have on the line as well Johnny Coker, who's both a journalist and a person experiencing what we're reporting on. Are you there?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, everyone. And this is definitely an important story. I think that's been affecting a lot of people, especially, you know, as we head into the new year.
Yeah, and if I could just clarify really quickly, Johnny is a colleague of mine and formerly a journalist at KRWG. You probably recognize his voice and name from there, but
good guy.
Now he's a freelancer, and he just happened to be experiencing this issue firsthand, and so that's why I thought he might be a good voice to have with me this morning.
So like I told Peter in the beginning of the show, the thing that I really like about your reporting on this is there's been so much talk on the national news, but all of it political, and none of it really, some of it is designed to scare people, some of it is designed to reassure people, but none of it really gives the nuts and bolts of the information that people need to know about. Is this going to impact me? If so, what am I going to do about it? So what did you find when you started to dig into that?
Yeah, I think that was the basis of why we even went in this direction in the first place, because it was such, you hear a lot about it, but it sort of brings a lot of questions like, what does it mean for me if I'm living here in New Mexico and I get my health insurance on the exchange and the marketplace? And there's so much back and forth at a very high level. You just have a lot of questions in your mind, like how many people are being affected by this in New Mexico? And then, of course, one of the interesting things that is going on here in New Mexico is that the state legislature actually did take action to basically create a state-funded version of these subsidies. So it sort of keeps them in place for New Mexicans. And unfortunately, that doesn't mean that people won't see cost increases, because there's just cost increases across the board in healthcare. And so those are trickling down. People will see those, even though we still have a state version of these subsidies in place.
So we know from your story that there are 75,500 people in the state, about that many, who are on the BeWell plan, about 10,000 in Doniana County. Do we know, I mean, not all of them are getting the subsidies, but is that something that most of them are?
I did ask that question from BeWell New Mexico, which is the entity that pretty much runs the state exchange slash marketplace, whatever you call it. And they said, they just described it as the vast majority of people do get some sort of subsidy, but I didn't quite get an exact number on that. But I think at least a significant majority seems to be benefiting from these enhanced premium tax credits, which is what the federal subsidies are called.
And am I right that the state will backfill for 1 year on this? Is that correct, at least in terms of what's been passed so far?
They, at BeWell, they were sort of careful to couch it as, well, this is a state fiscal year issue, so it technically ends June 30th, I guess. So they said they're expecting the legislature to take it up again come January in this upcoming session, because, I mean, it's technically only a half year at this point.
I see. So not even the full fiscal year coming up.
Yeah. But it would definitely leave people in sort of a bind if the state legislature didn't continue these their version of the subsidy through till the end of the calendar year, because the Be Well New Mexico plans are a calendar year.
Right.
So January 1st to December 31st.
Well, let's hear from Johnny on the subject.
Yeah, sure. One thing I wanted to definitely mention, while the state of New Mexico does have their own version of the subsidy on the healthcare marketplace, it definitely is just a drop in the bucket compared to what the federal subsidies were. So even though it is helping people, you know, try to stay on their insurance plans, it is, still definitely an issue for a lot of people. I know I saw my premiums jump, over double, and I have also friends who do contracting and freelancing, you know, who are just going uninsured and are just having medical issues that they're just like, I guess I'm, you know, I can't go to a doctor because I can't afford it now. So even though, like I said, even though these state subsidies do help, a lot of folks are still just not able to afford what they're seeing right now.
So you're saying for you, even with the state subsidies, your premiums are still going up by double of what they were before?
Yes, yes. Well, let's see. Because I'm with my wife also. So essentially, yes. I mean, the state subsidy knocks off like $150, at least personally for me, off of like a $1,000 premium, and then versus, you know, we were paying $400 or $500 last year. So definitely problematic.
Yeah, and Be Well New Mexico says that they've seen average rate increases of 36%. So an average of 36% means some people are paying even higher increases than that percentage-wise. So yeah, what Johnny's experiencing, I've seen other people on social media talking about, just even with these subsidies in place, the increases have been significant in the premiums.
It's probably too soon to tell, but do we have any even preliminary numbers yet in terms of how many people are just deciding to drop their insurance?
I think I think you're right, and that it's a little too early to say, because technically people can sign up through January 15th on the exchange.
Yeah, the sign-up period is going on right now as we speak.
Yes, yeah. People still have a chance to sign up, and so I think the numbers will tell us something after January 15th, but it is probably a little too early at this point to say. But that has been a concern, not just in New Mexico, but nationally, that people are going to be dropping their healthcare coverage because they basically don't think they can afford it. So it will definitely be interesting to see if that does happen here in New Mexico.
Something I'd like to add is that a lot of open enrollment periods for, you know, if you are employed, I know some folks, you know, their company's open enrollment period was in October, but they were on the exchange because they have medical issues that, you know, their employer's insurance wasn't covering, therefore they went through the exchange. And then, of course, the government shut down over all of this, you know, in November. And then by the time they're trying to figure out their insurance, their open enrollment period is long past, and they have to choose between being shelling out, you know, most of their money for insurance or just going uninsured completely.
Yeah, the timing of this seemed really difficult for, you know, trying to plan ahead, you know.
Yeah.
So there's different thresholds for the enhanced premium tax credits. One of them is 100%, those households are earning 100% to 399% of the federal poverty level. Usually people who are 100% or lower are on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And then above that, at some point, you know, the exchange insurance kicks in where you have access to the exchange. And so there were about 51,000 people or in December who were part of that category. and in New Mexico. And the legislature, in its regular session this year, passed the enhanced premium tax credits that would apply to that group in case the federal government's expired. But it wasn't until October, whenever they had a special session, that they approved the enhanced premium tax credit, or the state version of it, for households earning 400% of the federal poverty level or higher. So that came a lot later. So there's been a lot of uncertainty around this whole issue because of the federal issues and also just how things happen in the state. And it does seem like it has created issues like what Johnny is talking about.
One of the challenges, I think, of the Affordable Care Act is that it was not accepted by all of the states. And so you have states that never signed on to it who are saying, well, why should my taxpayers pay to set for subsidies that are going to people in other states? And I get that argument. I just think it is such a
because you elected jackasses.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
But it has left us with this system where we, I've talked about this all the time. We used to have an indigent care fund. We used to, specifically set money aside because we knew that there were people who would show up at the hospital and need care and not be able to pay for it. And we got rid of that because under the new system, theoretically, everybody is insured. But that has never been the case throughout the country. And so for states like New Mexico, who, there was a time when I was, after I'd been just been laid off by the Sun News, when I was on the Be Well NM plan, and it worked great for me. And I was incredibly grateful that was available. I don't know I do know what I would have done. I was young enough and healthy enough. I just would have gone without.
One question I think I would have if I were sitting home listening to all this is, it's terrible if people have illnesses they can't get treated or injuries or whatever, but ultimately somehow the community pays, either because those folks get disabled by not being able to get medical care and ultimately the government has to help them, or they go to the hospital and the hospital has to help them. You can't just send people away because they don't have money or medical care. Who ultimately, if I'm sitting at home, am I not ultimately paying something for this?
I think you're right in asking that question because, Congressman Vasquez was sort of doing a circuit highlighting this issue a couple months back. And Elva went to that session, one of the roundtable discussions that they hosted. And certainly it was a concern of providers like La Clínica de Familia. I'm guessing it probably is a concern of the hospitals too, because they sort of have this open access model where they treat people who show up, at their offices and at the ER, regardless of. They just have to care for them, and because of legal obligations, basically. And so if you're all of a sudden getting a bunch of patients who don't have adequate insurance or are just uninsured altogether, then they'll be footing more of the bill for that, which is called uncompensated care from their end, which means they're providing services and not getting any sort of reimbursement for it, which is a toll on their bottom line. And so then they have to make hard decisions like, do I hire this doctor or do I not hire this doctor, because do we have the budget for it? So it creates a lot of complicating factors for healthcare providers, which I think you could argue takes a toll on your community whenever, if they're reducing office hours or if they're not hiring some sort of specialist because they don't feel like they have the budget for it, then there is there's an impact down the line. And that's what La Clínica's CEO was saying, is that it does take a toll if, these things go away.
Johnny, you sort of mentioned this earlier, but can you just talk about, the difficult discussions that I'm sure you're having at the dinner table these days as you're mulling your future on this issue?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it was just me
Yeah.
I would definitely be uninsured, but my wife has some ongoing medical issues where she needs to have insurance. So that's honestly, I mean, it's either, you know, be uninsured and be left to, you know, be unmedicated and unhelped, or shell out a ton of savings and, you know, a ridiculous percentage of your income just to stay a normally functioning member of society. And on top of the premiums going up, I essentially just have a plan through the marketplace that's just for emergencies in case I, you know, break my leg or, you know, get appendicitis. It's definitely, so I'm getting less care, paying more for
right.
it. And, you know, and like I said, a lot of folks that, you know, are friends of mine that live in the same world of mine of contracting and 1099 work are in those spots of, you know, I have a friend who thinks he broke his foot the other day and his insurance is running out at the end of the year and he's just not going to renew. And he's like, well, I hope my foot heals all right. And just sitting and having these conversations, it's hard to fathom for me, you know, how we've gotten to this place. And as a young person that used to be more optimistic, it's hard to imagine the federal government working, you know, in the interest of us at any point. Yeah, it's been really frustrating, and it's tough. And I'm lucky enough, you know, me and my wife are lucky enough to where we can at least afford health insurance, and we're going to keep, you know, keep our heads down and keep churning, I guess.
Yeah, but boy, it's the richest nation in the world, you would think we could do better.
Well, particularly
yeah,
since...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead, John.
No, yeah, it's just hard not to lose faith, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Are younger people experiencing... Are younger people who are experiencing this beginning to want to advocate as loudly as possible, not just for extending subsidies and lowering medical costs, but getting rid of the whole thing and going to the kind of model that every other civilized country has, where health care is something you get?
Right. And, you know, that's something, it feels so far out of reach, yet we see so many other countries doing it. And yeah, the conversations I have with my colleagues, we might disagree on how to get there, but I think the general consensus that you can get out of everybody is the current system has to be abolished completely, and the siphoning of money to healthcare companies and to, you know, bankrupting us is, it's just got to end. It's not sustainable.
No, and it makes no sense when we have a country that wants to take care of its citizens, theoretically. We are the country. We are the citizens. It's a democracy. Why are we interposing between the doctors and the patients this whole insurance superstructure where people make huge profits insuring you against getting sick, which we all are, or enough of us are, that it's going to be very costly. There's no if about that. It's not like, well, you know, is there a flood going to take out your house, you know, in a low point part of Las Cruces someday? We are going to spend all this money on medical care. Why let insurance companies make huge profits insuring us against that in the first place? I mean, as a basic system.
Here's the big philosophical. Go ahead, Johnny. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just, I mean, it's, like you're alluding to, it's more expensive to continue this system than it would be to just go to a single-payer system like so many other countries have done.
All the other countries.
Yeah. Yeah, it's out of control.
So, Diana, I know that, you know, the governor has already proposed her budget for next year, $11.3 billion. I mean, is the plan for the state just to try to keep patching this as best they can as we go?
That's a question we haven't gotten into yet, but I did see that the budget was released, and I just haven't had a chance to look into it yet.
Yeah.
But these, at least the state versions of the subsidies, do seem to be fairly expensive. I mean, I did find the budget number for 6 months of paying for the folks who are at 400% or higher than the federal poverty level, and that's $17.3 million. So double that for a year, that's going to be... You know,
and honestly, I mean, 400% of the poverty level seems like you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, it. I don't think it's as. I mean, they do say that, you know, you can earn. It depends on your household size, your zip code, and your number of people in your family. So it's possible to earn so much you don't get a subsidy. That's definitely a possibility. But I also don't think it's quite as much as it sounds. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Johnny's phone number.
Okay. Great.
I know that we were planning to talk to one of your colleagues at the local news fund. Is that what we're discussing now?
Yes. Yeah,
we're trying to.
Okay.
Actually, since we've just Johnny, you need to hang up. Our producer Minerva Rivera will text you a different number to call, which allows both you and Denise to be on the line together. So. Hang up for a moment.
Okay, and Diana, do you want to introduce Denise?
Yes. So Denise is my colleague at the New Mexico Local News Fund and is the Director of Communications and Development. Just joined us this year as a new colleague, and she's been great to work with so far. We wanted to see if we could take a little bit of time to spotlight our New Mexico Local News matching campaign, which is ongoing through the end of the year, and KTAL is participating in it. So, welcome, Denise.
Denise.
Good morning.
Welcome, Diana. Denise. We're just here. We just barely began talking about the New Mexico Local News matching campaign, so I've already introduced you, and so just wanted to say welcome, and if you can maybe talk a little bit about the matching campaign, what it is, what it hopes to accomplish, and how it's going so far.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Diana, and thanks for having me as well. So the matching campaign this year is really exciting because we have 27 newsrooms this year, which is the most that we've ever had participating in the matching campaign. And every dollar that is donated to participating newsrooms will be matched up to $6,000 by the New Mexico Local News Fund. So I'm really excited because I think the campaign is phenomenal about having these conversations about lifting up the message that local news is so vital to our state and that we're putting those real dollars behind it to keep those local news organizations and newsrooms active and working. And I love anything that's community effort, especially around this time of year. So we're going to the end of December and it's going really strong. I'm really excited. And as well as y'all are participating also, so that's super exciting, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I should say that the real impetus of our doing this fundraiser in December was the opportunity that was given to us through the Local News Fund. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we are on pace for what I think will be our most successful fundraiser ever. And much due to the Local News Fund, as well as the Devastali Foundation, who... issued a grant to us this year that was incredibly helpful. And we talk all the time about, you know, the news deserts. And, you know, somebody, Diana and I both remember the time when the Las Cruces Sun News was this vibrant, well-staffed newspaper that was every day putting new information out there into the community. And we, as we all know, the marketing, what's the word, the business model for that just doesn't work anymore. And so just because the business model doesn't work doesn't mean that journalism isn't important. And so that is, you know, a long-winded way of saying thank you very much for not your support of not only us, but for all of these other independent groups who are trying to fill that void.
Amen.
Yes, absolutely. I think what we're seeing right now is we're seeing a massive shift, right, in journalism due to a lot of different factors. But it's exciting that we can still bring that community effort and keep that alive in the ways that we can. And yeah, we have to change and we have to pivot a little bit, be a little bit more strategic now. But I think the community effort is really the exciting part here, to know that you are still vital to the community, watching the community take a role in keeping everything alive and moving is always so exciting. And of course, if you're listening, you can always visit us at nmlocalnews.org to find out all of the participating newsrooms and learn a little bit more about what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Let me ask you guys a personal question that Walt and I hear from people a lot, and without getting partisan about it, there is an unusual amount of ugliness around and hyper-partisanship in our country. How do you avoid, while you're reporting on it and observing it, how do you avoid letting it get to you inside?
That actually can be a tough one. I can speak personally. I think it's never really been the easiest job to be a journalist, because really there's always somebody who's upset at you for one reason or another. That's been my experience. And I just try to embody that, you know, not let what other people think about what I do affect what I do, you know, and just be steadfast in that mindset that it is, I believe, a community service in some degree, and that it's important to our democracy. And at some level, when you get down to it, I feel like there's a level at which local news sort of gets under the politics. I don't know.
Right.
There's a level where, you know, people don't want potholes on their streets.
That's right.
A partisan issue? I don't think so. I mean, maybe it could be, but it would optimally not be. But there's a level of community health and wellness.
Not sure you've been to a school board meeting or city council lately, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I know it ends up being political at some level, but I mean, the things people care about, it's not a Republican or a Democrat or an independent issue. So I feel that that's where local news does shine, in that we're telling people issues, you know, in the communities that are in New Mexico.
Can you talk about a few of the other organizations, the journalism organizations that you guys are supporting through this?
Certainly. I'll defer to Denise on that.
Yeah, there's so many. Southwest Contemporary is one of the first ones that come to mind. I still do some freelance writing with them as a journalist in arts and culture. And especially, I think, since we've seen a lot of arts and culture coverage be removed from a lot of local news as things have shifted. I think it's super exciting to watch what they're doing and having that collective conversation about the Southwest and what we're looking at within that space. KUNM is in there. KRWG is there. Las Cruces Bulletin is there. Gallup Sun is also participating. The Silver City Daily Press, Albuquerque Journal, Searchlight New Mexico. There's so many. That's why this year is so exciting. Everyone is pretty much covered at some spot in some area of the state. And so I think that's really the exciting part here too.
We are down to our final minute. I know we have Johnny Coker back on the line. Johnny, any final thoughts that you'd like to make before we wrap up here?
Well, just talking about the hyper-partisanship, I think it's, you know, it not only does it affect journalists, it affects everybody. And I think, you know, while it seems dark, I think it's just important to, you know, keep our heads down and keep doing the work that we think can improve our communities, you know.
We are all 100% in agreement with that. Denise, I want to thank you so much for joining us and letting us know a little bit more about the Local News Fund and the important work that you guys do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.